almost the time, give or take a couple of seconds. Australian Indigenous art is the longest unbroken tradition of art in the world, and some of it's so old that it shows long extinct animals. Dating it has, in many cases, been really tricky, though. You can imagine why. But now it looks like ancient mud wasps' nests could hold the key to dating the art. Damien Finch is from the University of Melbourne. He's played a key role in researching and dating the art. A very good morning to you. You came to research this art in a quite unusual way because you'd never come across it or had any real interest in it until the start of your retirement. So how did you get involved with it?
That's exactly right, Nick. It's been 10 years now since I first visited the Kimberley, and when I did so, it was really at the tail end of my interest in it. You know, I was pretty much working toward retirement. So it was on a bushwalk in this area of Australia that is just so remote. I mean, even for us Australians, the Kimberley's a long way away. It sits there at the top northwest corner of Western Australia. Very, very low population density. Very, very few people live there. But if you spend a few weeks up there walking around the bush with a 20-kilo pack on your back, you get a different perspective, that's for sure. And it's certainly an amazing environment to be able to work in.
Can you describe where the art is found and what it's like? Because you say it's so remote. I mean, wandering around with a backpack on your back, how do you spot it and how do you know where it is?
That's a great question. We rely on people that have been researching or walking around the Kimberley now, you know, modern day sort of explorers, if you like, for the last 30 years, who became so enamored with the art themselves that they wanted to record it, or in a way that would be recorded for all time. And so they have really produced records, people like Graham Walsh and David Welsh, and intrepid sort of explorers, modern day explorers. So we have from their databases, sites, and the Kimberley Foundation themselves, people that sponsor part of our work, have been doing research and walking around recording rock art sites in the area for a couple of decades now. So we were able to draw on that database of sites, and not too much wandering around the bush and stubbing our toes.
Why did you find it so fascinating? Is it the age? Is it the span of age that it could be from that is the interesting thing here?
For me, it was quite a sort of a personal thing, but I must admit a lot of people that I've spoken to have the same reaction. But when you are in an area as remote as this, and you know, you'd understand that if you came from the UK to Australia, you've already come a long way. Well, you travel a long distance, you know, small planes and bumpy roads and four-wheel drive cars and all that sort of stuff. You walk around for a week in the bush, and then you see in these rock shelters that are usually within a kilometre or two of permanent water, you know. So we're walking along rivers and creeks, and you scarper up into to the rock shelters that are in the gorges that these rivers will often flow through. And you see these images of past people's artistic efforts in an environment where there's absolutely no sign of people. You know, there's no roads, and there's no signs, there's no plastic water bottles. There's, you know, there's absolutely no evidence of any activity other than people having painted all those thousands of years ago in some cases. Well, some of the paintings are much more modern, but the ones that we're talking about are the older style.
It's quite a light state. Presume this. It's quite a late stage in life to come across something that has become such a new passion for you.
I guess it is, yeah. As Australians, I think this, you know, I've always lived here, so you do feel, people are starting to feel a connection to country. And it's part of the search for identity, isn't it? You know, it's all that sort of stuff. So I think that the common thread here is the curiosity. I mean, that's what brings us to science and engineering, isn't it? It just didn't seem right that we didn't understand how old these paintings were. And I thought, well, there's a bit of a mystery. There's something to explore. And as I got into it more and found that there was some evidence, but really not much evidence at all, not much written about it, I thought, gosh, you know, that just that seems a bit anomalous. So it was just curiosity, Nick, that set me on this path, really.
It's interesting, isn't it? You don't presume that anything in this day and age, where every single thing seems to have been written about and researched, that you're going to come across something that we don't know that much about, and we don't know the history of it. I mean, we're so used nowadays to turning on a computer and just going to Wikipedia and finding all the details are with all the reference points there as well. But to find something that it hasn't had that much information known about it before, that's staggering. It's an opportunity, isn't it?
Absolutely, yes. It's exactly the way I feel, because we all see fantastic programs made about the archaeology of pyramids in Egypt and that sort of thing. Wonderful stories, and give you a real sense for what we as a human race has done in the past. But the pyramids at Giza are only, 4,500 years old? And here we're talking about paintings that are 12,000 years old. And what was life like for people back then? What did they do? And why on earth did they do these paintings? And you can get a feel for where curiosity takes you on this journey.
I'm guessing that the weather in that part of the world has stayed pretty constant for millennia. Is that why it becomes so hard to actually date it? Because everything stays the same, and therefore it could be from any period of time.
Yes, once things, you know, were 1,000 or 2,000 or 3,000 years old, I guess they pretty much look rather similar to something that's 10,000 years old. It is often hard to tell. We try to pick only really old wasp nests, and some of the nests that we've dated have been over 20,000 years old, but other nests are like 1,000 years old. So I can't really tell the difference between the two, and it's similar with the paintings. If those modern day explorers that I mentioned hadn't determined the sequence of the art, you know, the fact that paintings of old style paintings of kangaroos and plants were always painted underneath the figures that we've recently dated, these human figures. If they hadn't done that work, we wouldn't know what the sequence was. And it's really that sequence that's given us a relative age, but we've never had that absolute age. We've never been able to put a number on it. Right, with any confidence.
You've started to talk about the wasp's nest here. This is the fascinating stuff for me. How do you use wasp's nests to date rock art?
We went down this path because the pigment is so old now that even if it did contain something other than ochre, which is what we see there today, it's an ochre, it's a browny red, very dark brown, very dark red, almost black colour. But basically that's, you know, just the mineral hematite, just iron oxide, you know, sort of like rust. But there's nothing organic in there. There's nothing in there that we can use to carbon date it, which is a term I think probably most people have heard about. You know, we talk about carbon dating all sorts of things, tree stumps buried in the ground from, you know, Roman activity or something like that. So it's that carbon dating and the fact that it's proven to be a very reliable technique.
Because you need something, but you need something carbon to date.
You do. And the thing that we noticed in the Kimberley when we went up there at all different times of the year, and we've gone up probably about eight times in the last 5 years, the thing about it is that the wasps are collecting basically what's sand, because the geology there that's so stable is a sandstone geology, and that's what supports the rock art for all that time. The sandstone itself is about 1.8 billion years old, so it's really hard, and when people paint it on it, it's tended to stay there. But when that withers away a bit, it forms sand at the bottom of the rock shelter, but there's also a lot of ash and smoke and therefore charcoal in their environment. Because even these days, about a third of the Kimberley burns every year. So lots of ash, lots of charcoal, and tiny little bits of microscopic bits of charcoal get mixed into the sediment, the soil that the wasp nest comes and forms into a little 2 or 3 millimeter ball and then carries off in its mandibles to build a nest on the rock shelter wall.
And that's the bit that can be carbon dated when you when you come to do it.
That's right. There's really a couple of things we've got going for us here. One is that the wasp nest, over time that charcoal breaks down, but the wasp nest is mostly made up of sand, it's quartz, you know. So it sort of becomes fossilized, and that seals it off from the environment and does help to preserve things. But the samples that we collect are so small that on average they're about 250 milligrams. So you could fit almost 8 or 10 of them over our average sample into a teaspoon, you know, quite small samples that we take, because we certainly want to avoid damaging the rock art. So that tiny sample, then the amount of charcoal in that is, as you can imagine, it's just so much smaller again. But fortunately, we've got some extremely capable scientists up at the Australian Nuclear Science and Technology Organisation. And they built a machine, one of which is not unique in the world. There's a few in the world that can date down to micrograms of carbon. So we're talking about being able to work out the age of 1/1,000,000th of a gram of carbon, and in our case, that carbon comes from the charcoal.
And so, when you'd done this work, what age did you find the art was? Was it 5 years old, 10 years old, or I'm guessing an awful lot older? But was there a range?
Yes. There is a range, but perhaps it'll help if I explain that, because there's nothing in the art that we can date. And we can only date this mud wasp. So they've got to be over the top or underneath a painting to tell us anything about the age of the painting. And really, you know, the wasp doesn't know when the painting was made. So the wasp could have built the nest over the top of the painting at any time. So you've got to go out and collect and then date quite a range of samples. And the age of all the nests that are over the top of paintings, they tell you that the painting has got to be older than that nest that you've dated. And in those smaller number of cases where we've got nests that are actually underneath paint, when we work out the age of the nest, we know the painting has got to be younger than the nest. And then you can imagine, if you've got enough dates over the top and underneath, then you sort of get an age bracket. And that's exactly what we've done. We've analysed and got the statistics for the ages of the nests over the top and for the ones underneath, and the gap in the middle is about 12,000 years ago. So these paintings in this particular area, almost all of them look as though they're consistent with that notion that they were painted, or that they were proliferated at 12,000 years ago.
So 12,000, I'm trying to think, what else was happening in the world 12,000 years ago?
It's before the Egyptians, isn't it? Yes, and it's befuddled me to come up. It is so far back in time now that I have trouble coming up with examples to explain it to people. So I think if the pyramids are, say, 4,500 years ago, so we're talking about something that's more than twice as old as this. And I can tell you that at the time that people were painting these paintings, that the ancestors of today's Aboriginal people in this area, the woolly mammoths were roaming around parts of country not too far from where you are. So the woolly mammoths were started to sort of die out by then. But that's what we're talking about. We're talking about, you know, things starting to warm up after the last ice age, but you know, some of the animals that thrived at that time are still around. And it is just a totally different environment from the one that we see today, isn't it? It's amazing. A long way back. It is.
Now, you work alongside the traditional owners of the rock art, the indigenous communities. Who are they, and why is it important that you work with them? What do they think of what you're doing?
Yes, it's absolutely vital because, I mean, we are on their country. The country that we've been working on is Belangara country. That's a broader area. It's within the Kimberley. Percentage-wise, I don't know, it's about probably 10 or 20% of the Kimberley. I could be wrong. But it's a part of the Kimberley. And within their country, the particular group who have traditional custodianship for the area where we're researching is the Kwini group. And Kwini elders, when we first asked for permission to go on their country and to then take samples that were over the top of their ancient rock art, you can imagine that we needed to build up a lot of trust, and that took years. People started on that, like my supervisor Andy Glitto and the Kimberley Foundation started on building those relationships and that trust before I started on the project 5 years ago. So it takes time, but I think that we have that trust and we've been allowed to work with the people since that time. And every trip that we do, every sample that we take on their country, we have usually one of the younger traditional owners that comes out with each of the science teams. When I say science team, because there's people doing, there's a small group that do what I do. It's not just me, but there are other teams using different techniques to try and date rock art, and there are archaeologists from the University of Western Australia that are doing excavations, and people from Monash University do. So it's a big team of people, and all of us will have a company as a traditional owner. I think there's also the notion that because it is Belangara country, it's the indigenous owners feel responsible when we're on their country. If we got hurt, for example, that they would feel very bad about that. So there's very much the notion of the young fellas keeping us safe, which is just absolutely wonderful.
I was going to say you're nearly there with your retirement. How much time does this take?
No, long way off retirement. There's another 10 years work here at least.
And you're going to do that? You think that, you know, you need to carry this on now, just from a personal basis?
Yeah, from a personal basis, there's nothing I would rather do. I've never had so much fun in my life. It is an intriguing scientific challenge. We get to work with traditional owners whose history in the country goes back, as we know, to 40, 50, 60,000 years now. It's a very great privilege indeed to be able to do that. And we can only do it. And we can't afford to, I'm too old to walk around all this country, but fortunately, the people that fund us allow us to use helicopters to fly around. So sometimes it's not too bad, I can tell you.
I mean, the interesting thing is that because this is rock art, it's art on rock, it can't be moved. So most people will never, ever see this.
No, I think that there's... There are people in Europe doing wonderful things with, recreating things like Chabot Cave in miniature. I think those sorts of techniques around 3D visualization and things, I'm hoping that the future may support work in that area too, so that we can bring these shelters and this art to a wider range. But we have some interesting videos and things that are available, so people can get a feel for it through various places like the Kimberley Foundation website or other places. Yeah,
Damien Finch, thank you so much. Fascinating work, and may there be many, many more years of work out of it. Thanks very much indeed. Time now on 5 Live. It's 3:29.
On digital, BBC Sound.